just another solid day in California. It's just the way that I was raised in California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies and bricks swimming in the sea.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. Today we have somebody who I've wanted to have on the podcast for a while. She works in and around sports. She's kind of a sports media specialist. And we're going to talk some NBA with Jessica Slade. Hey, Jessica, what's going on?
Hey, I'm so glad I could finally get on the show and, of course, talk about the one thing I like the most, which is NBA.
Yeah, absolutely. Jessica's, of course, from San Luis Obispo, but has been in the Phoenix area working for the Suns and writing for other things and doing all kinds of sports stuff. The NBA is only a couple days old here, Jessica, and I wanted to kind of get your early impressions and I guess start off with a question. What's one thing that you think now about the NBA this season that maybe you weren't so sure about, I don't know, 3 or 4 days ago?
I mean, the Clippers are definitely trying to remind people that they, you know, they're not the little brother in LA anymore. They actually are competitive. They have some bearing to their skills this season. And so that's, I think, going to be huge as far as shaking up the West. But in general, there was so much distribution with free agency and shifting of power and players and sending some of the big guys east. And now every team kind of has two all-stars, or it's distributed differently. And I think we're starting to see that there is a more level playing field and that it's not just going to be the powerhouse Golden State Warriors anymore, but every chance is in here, or every team is in here with a fighting chance. And I think just in the first couple days, we've already seen that that's going to be really cool.
Yeah, you watch teams like the Celtics maybe kind of take a step down. A team like the Rockets lost last night to a team that you wouldn't think they should have, right?
Yeah.
And you saw James Harden and Russell Westbrook kind of talking to each other. I always used to love and obviously there's way more access to this stuff now video-wise, but I always used to just love watching like full games early on in the season and just watching how guys are talking to each other and how guys are interacting with each other and kind of what that all, you know, kind of entails. And it gave me kind of a good feeling for how the outlook's going to be. You saw last night with the Clippers just, you know, laying it on the Warriors late in the game, Kawhi Leonard not having to play a ton of minutes. I think this is one of the things to look out for this year in the NBA is guys being able to rest either during games if they're on really great teams or, you know, involved in blowout games or teams choosing to play players. Like you saw three Kings players get hurt in a game that wasn't close against the Suns late in it. There was a funny video of like DeAndre Ayton kind of like hurting three guys and 2 minutes or something like that. That was kind of random, but I think that's one of the storylines coming into this year. Is that something you see too? And if so, kind of who are those players that you know you may or may not see who are going to kind of get in that, I guess, what's it called? Like load management, right?
Right. I think it'll be interesting to see for the Lakers after kind of that blowout with the Clippers to see how they introduce Kuzma once he's back. I think the more they're able to utilize their bench and not rely so heavily on LeBron, I think that'll be really crucial for them because as great as LeBron is, and he really is untouchable talent, but a point forward isn't a sustainable position. You're just going to exhaust him and then you're going to get to, you know, playoffs and stuff like that. And he's just not going to have the same durability he is here.
Sure.
So being able to, like you said, distribute that load to some of those other guys, AD, Kuzma, even like Dudley, he was doing some pretty consistent work for them. So for at least the Lakers, I think that's going to be really big. And the Clippers, I think that's what has allowed them to be so successful so far this season is their bench is an immense contributor to their points. So their bench is even scoring sometimes more than their starters because they're able to bring in Lou Will and Patterson. These guys are, you know, giving Kawhi that break, and they haven't even introduced Paul George yet. So that's going to be a whole nother factor for them. And I think that's what Golden State has struggled with as I know the broadcasters last night when they put in their second string, they were like, this looks like a G League game. And I respect the G League for sure. But, you know, we are used to seeing Golden State with 8 All-Stars and the entire NBA on one team. And for them to now have to work around that, they don't have Clay. They can't just sit there and wait for D'Lo and Curry to go off. They kind of need to do that.
And the Lakers, you could say the same thing about. I think it's fascinating how the Clippers have been able to, accumulate guys that are enough guys where they could still trade for Paul George. And a lot of people said, man, you guys gave up a lot for Paul George. And in terms of draft picks, I mean, there's going to be some long-term effects of that, I guess. But if you win a title or two with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, it's totally worth it. When you look at kind of what the Clippers were able to accumulate and still keep, like you mentioned, like Lou Williams and some of these assets that they're still able to keep under the salary cap for now, a lot like kind of, I mean, if you think about it, it is kind of like what the Warriors were able to do with keeping guys like Iguodala and Livingston and some of those kind of second level guys who could still get you points and do things for you. Whether it's, you know, like you mentioned, Lou Williams or even some of their bigs, the thing, and I know this is crazy for me to say, but like the thing that frustrates me the most about, the Lakers and Clippers and kind of where they've, you know, what they've done. And I'm a Laker fan is why did the Lakers have to trade Zubats? Like that's my biggest pet peeve with everything that's happened, because from a depth standpoint and a youth standpoint, there didn't seem like there was a lot of reasoning for that trade. And now you end up with Dwight Howard at his age and he looks about 3 inches shorter than he used to. I don't even know. I'm sure he's lost some weight and stuff, but he looks and maybe the whole league's gotten taller, but you didn't need to do that. And now the Clippers have this asset who they don't even have to roll out every game, but who's a young guy who's developing and who can take some of those big man minutes when you need him to.
I think one of the issues is, and I mean, the Lakers did a great job at building a team and a roster, but I think they fell into that Golden State trap of thinking if we get all these household names, which these guys are obviously talented, that's how they get, you know, their reputation for being so good. But you get the Boogie Cousins, the Dwight Howards, the Anthony Davis, LeBron, all these guys are household names. The Clippers are not made up of household names, but they're made up of IQ players, of durable players, people that play both ways on the court. And I think that's what's been successful for them is they're not the shiny, you know, attractive team that people are used to when they think of like Golden State being successful with all those all-stars. And now the Lakers having all these all-stars, it's these guys are here to hoop and they don't care if you know who they are, or if you've heard their names or you know what college they went to, they're here to win. And I think that's kind of shaking things up, at least kind of in that LA basin where stars and glam are kind of everything. They don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
It didn't work for them before. And I think they learned that they had Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, and unfortunately that roster just didn't work out for them, and so now they're looking for, you know, actual players to contribute, whether or not we know who they are.
Yeah, I wonder sometimes, and this is like something I'm just kind of coming to terms with, is like, you know, the NBA is such a league of like and generationally the league is kind of the most matching with, I don't know, we want to say like millennials, people your age, Jessica. But you know, the league is definitely like set up to entice players to certain teams in certain ways that even 10 or 15 years ago weren't even fathomable. And I wonder sometimes as a Laker fan, if being a family owned team can even be a successful business model in any major professional sports league anymore. As I respect the Buss family and I think Jeannie's trying, you know, doing the best she can with it, I wonder about that sometimes, you know, in terms of being an individually or family owned company and being able to stay relevant over time. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Nuggets are a good example of the fact that they're not, you know, they're still not the number one team in the West, but they're a very well run organization, and they come from a family enterprise that knows how to run sports teams. They own, you know, all kinds of different teams, both in the Colorado area and then nationally, internationally. And so that, I think it can be successful. The Buses are a very unique situation, but I don't know. I don't think that plays as much of a role in it as so much the GMs. And then you have people like LeBron who get a pretty good voice in the whole process.
And who are essentially a GM unto themselves. Yeah. Jessica, I know, you know, being somebody who's a fan of certain teams, you went to Texas and you bleed.
Yeah.
What's the color? It's not just orange. Is it burnt orange? What do you call it?
burnt orange. It's trademarked. it's like the North Carolina blue.
Yeah. Cool, so with that color. So you bleed that burnt orange, and you've been somebody who's been interested in lots of different sports, as you know, as you've grown up and been in the business here. But as you've kind of gone into doing more writing, doing more media, how has that changed your kind of ability to interact with, root for, pull for? I know that's something that as I got into, you know, sports media, it colored my viewpoint, I guess, on kind mm-hmm. of how I looked at games, how I looked at things. How has that, has being a writer kind of and a pro in the field kind of changed how you consume the sport of basketball, especially?
I'm not sure if it changes so much how I consume it. I think it definitely makes me more enthusiastic. So every night there's a game I'm looking forward to because I've met that player, I've worked with that coach, or whatever the situation may be. It's not just like, oh, I'm a fan of this team, so I only care when the Clippers play, or I only care when Texas plays. Usually I can get enthusiastic about some form of storyline in any game. As far as being a professional, my content, the stuff I put out, it definitely gives you perspective. So I think when you're just a fan or someone that hides behind Twitter, it's easy to be like, oh, it's this player's fault. Blame everything on them. KCP didn't show up, whatever you want to say. I think once you get to know these guys, kind of see what work they put in, the hours they're spending in the gym, you really step back and think, all right, yeah, but it could have just been an off night. Or you really, I think, spend more time putting in more intricate analysis than just the easy blanket statements of like, right. Oh, James Harden sucked tonight, he's going to suck the rest of the season. It's not that simple anymore, because you get more insight and you have more respect for not only the players, but the game as a whole.
It softens that up, I think. And it also makes you, at least in my experience, it made me like look at people who were making blanket statements to me and mm-hmm. going like, man, you don't know what you're talking about sometimes too. It's like, you know, to your point about, you know, hey, maybe you just had a bad night, or there's other factors here. I feel that way. Sometimes when I hear criticism of different teams that I take photos for, that I've written about in the past, you know, especially, you know, college teams with college players, and I just love watching guys develop, and I keep that possibility as a possibility in my head, and it's not, and people don't always kind of picture that. And to your point earlier about the Warriors having what some people were calling like a team that looked like a G League team. And when we're talking about other teams in the NBA right now, you know, youth is definitely, a key variable with a lot of these teams that have, you know, really kind of haves and have nots, or stars and scrubs, if you want to think of it that way. Yeah. Guys who are getting paid a lot, and then you have to fill out the roster with guys who you're kind of taking a shot on or taking a chance on who might not be. And so one of the things that I'm really looking forward to this year is watching how and whether young players develop. Players are getting mm-hmm. into the NBA younger and younger, and the possibility for change didn't used to really be there in my head. I think I thought, maybe, you know, these guys are kind of who they are, but you watch players develop certain parts of their game, and be able to be better and better, whether you're talking about, you know, Kelly Oubre, or whether you're talking about, you know, Ivica Zubats or whoever, you know, there are players out there who you can, if you're paying close attention, you can see these guys get better, not just mm-hmm. kind of season to season, but sometimes, you know, beginning, middle, and end of the season too.
Definitely. And I think it can often be misconstrued as bias, or, you know, now you're an insider, so you're not, you know, being honest with yourself. And I can look at a game still and be like, oh, you know, he was lazy on defense tonight, or he needs to work on transition. But then you also have the statements like Ben Simmons, you know, he wants to really improve his three. And I think the hard thing for a lot of people to understand, one, if they've never played basketball, but especially if they've never played a sport at all, is that development doesn't stop. So LeBron could be the best player in the game right now. He does not go into the gym and keep doing what he's already doing. He's going to keep challenging himself. It doesn't matter if it's been 17 years or not. So the development is always going to be there. Sometimes it's not as drastic and noticeable, but I think the more you're involved in the game, the more you're immersed in it, the more you respect the process, whatever level it may be. So sometimes it's, you know, going from college to NBA, or G League to NBA, or even, you know, on the smaller scale, watching the AAU guys switch over to their high school teams. There's going to be all these little intricate parts that, unless, you know, if you're just looking at the big picture and think, oh, the team sucked tonight, they're, you know, destined for failure the rest of the season. You're not going to have the same, I think, spotlight on the talent and the insight to the players and what they're contributing that you would once you get kind of immersed in it.
I heard an interview, I think it was with Mike Brown one time, who was an assistant, I believe, on the LeBron, Wade, Bosch Heat team for Spoelstra.
Yeah.
And obviously he's on the bench in the with the Warriors now. He's one of Kerr's assistants up there, former Lakers coach, former, what, Cavs and Knicks, I think, too, right? Maybe?
I believe so.
Yeah. So Maybe. He was talking, I think, about developing Eurosteps and he was talking about how Wade had kind of started to develop it and how he showed it to, he showed, you know, some drills to like LeBron and like, I don't know, like 4 days later, LeBron was using it in a game and he described that process. And you mentioned AAU guys, even we think of these mm-hmm. guys sometimes inappropriately as finished products, whether they're in AAU or college or even in the NBA. And it's those guys who don't think of themselves as that is, you know, are I think sometimes the players who do make those steps and who do keep developing and getting better. For you, who's one or two players in the league, and you've seen a lot of games in this league at this point over the mm-hmm. past couple of years. Who are one or two players that you're like, man, this player isn't really like known as like a you know, like a top level player, but maybe in a year or two that player is going to be there.
I don't know. That's tough because I think there's a lot of, you know, the rookies that are coming in that are really big. And sometimes there's people that are already household names. I've always been a big Tobias Harris fan, and I think he contributes really strong. And I think if you went to a lot of people, they might overlook him. But he's somebody that teams want. The Sixers were definitely lucky when they got him. So I'm always excited to see how he, you know, contributes. And then I don't know. I mean, a lot of these players are developing regardless. So right. A big one that I really liked was, who am I trying to think of?
Like I was thinking De'Aaron Fox is going to make that transition this year from like a guy who, you know, people kind of know about to a guy who people really know about. The first couple games are a little bit inauspicious, but he's a guy who I think has that, you know, potential that way.
Yeah. And I think another big one that I kind of liked is Andrew Wiggins. He's somebody that came in really hot, was a really big deal when he was a rookie, kind of fell off. And then
Stock's really low right now, I'd say.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler kind of took the shine from the Timberwolves for a moment. You know, two seasons ago, but he's somebody that says, you know, he's tired of being overlooked. And I think those players that know they can contribute more than they are and are willing to put in the work to do that, Wiggins, De'Aaron Fox, whoever these guys are, I think those are the players to watch out for because they have a different level of motivation. It's not just about winning the championship. It's about how they win the championship, and they want to be somebody that contributes and that can carry some of the load for their team.
Interesting. Yeah. So buy some Andrew Wiggins stock right now. You know, I think a lot of people think he's just a scorer. So, you know, guys with chips on their shoulders sometimes finally come to terms with what they need to be to help teams and to help themselves be the best player they can be as well. Jessica, yeah. I'm interested, you know, growing up on the Central Coast, what were your like sports, I don't know, allegiances? I know it's hard to have allegiances mm-hmm. when you're in the media, but you know, when you were younger, obviously Texas has been a long time allegiance for you in terms of the college ranks.
Yeah.
But you know, I like to describe to people, because I grew up in Cayucas, and my best friend Miles was a Giants fan and I was a Dodgers fan, and we all lived mm-hmm. in, we kind of lived in harmony, right? It was kind of I kind of describe it. And it's true that there are more Giants fans in Paso and there are more Dodgers fans in AG, and being mm-hmm. right in San Luis Obispo, I'm just curious what that experience was like for you, not just with baseball necessarily, but like just in general, you know, interacting with sports and games. Were you somebody who kind of looked up north or who looked down south for your sports fix?
Yeah. So definitely being on the Central Coast, you kind of get your pick of teams, plus California in general has more than anyone else. I grew up definitely a Clippers fan, and then Giants and 49ers. So I've been fortunate enough to have two undefeated teams so far this season. The Giants kind of let me down, but I don't keep up with baseball the same way I do anymore. And then, I mean, I would never cheer for another college team over Texas. I've gotten close with ASU just because of you know, being in the area, wanting to support the local team, but Texas forever. And then Clippers and 49ers, I'm pretty diehard about.
Now Clippers growing up, that's an interesting choice, especially when, but I guess when you're growing up, you're talking about early Blake Griffin, you're talking about early kind of fun Clippers teams as they, you know, maybe even as far back as like Darius Miles, yeah. Guys like that, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Darius Miles years weren't, you know, super fun to watch, but you put the games on and you watch the other teams play sometimes.
Some Ralph Lawler.
Yeah, oh, love Ralph. I really hope that if we make it, you know, to playoffs, even the finals, that they bring him back for at least one game, because after 41 years of doing play-by-play for the team, he deserves that much.
Absolutely. Yeah, Ralph Lawler, when I was interning at a radio station the first time, he was one of the first guests I had to answer the phone for and put on, and I was like, that's Ralph Lawler. such a nice dude, for sure.
Absolutely. I remember I did a shadowing event for Media Day for the Clippers one year, the year after the whole DeAndre Jordan Mavericks lockout situation.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I guess lock in.
Yeah.
And met Ralph Lawler, and he was like, one day I'll be watching you instead of you watching me. And I was like, I'm taking that to my grave. That is my only motivation. So if I'm successful, it's because I have Ralph Lawler in the back of my head motivating me.
Absolutely. As a Laker fan, you know, the Ralph Bill Walton combo was one I don't think can be beat, you know, from another team. So that's cool. And obviously 49ers make a lot of sense. So you're kind of like a lot of people where you're kind of picking and choosing throughout California on some level. Mine's much more like regionally based, right? Like it's like probably the main team in LA is the team I'm going to root for most of the time. Or the team who was the main team in the 90s, for example. So, you know, that's kind of how that works here. How do you think, how do I put this in a way how do you think people on the Central Coast here, being from here, how do you think they interact with sports and fandom or fansmanship? Like, how do you think they interact with, especially professional sports, maybe the same or differently than people who maybe have closer access to those sports?
I definitely think baseball, with the Dodgers and the Giants kind of being split and that rivalry still being so strong, is huge for the Central Coast. And I think a huge part of that relies on the fact that baseball is more popular than basketball and football locally. So, you know, parents' kids are playing baseball. Football's never really been super popular on the Central Coast. You know, even soccer, but I just don't think the MLS is there as far as getting a fan base nationally, let alone in California. But yeah, baseball's definitely always been huge. I think I know a lot of people that travel for spring training. The Lakers have always been really popular, but just because they don't have a lot of players that they grew up with leaving to go to the NBA. They don't know familiar faces. They don't see familiar faces in the NFL fields. And so we do get some guys that leave Cal Poly or leave local high schools and go on to the MLB. And so those kind of things, I think, help continue to build on that baseball fan base. Whereas, you know, hockey, definitely not. And then basketball and football just struggle a little bit more to get some consistent fans.
More traction. Yeah, it's interesting how like the familiarity really, really colors that. You mentioned that when you talked about how you think about guys if they're having bad games. It's almost a double-edged sword, right? You want to have that familiarity so you can have that knowledge. But at the same time, I think for me anyway, because I try to be nice too, it kind of softens my perspective on things sometimes. I know it has over the years as I've gotten close to different players. Jessica, where can people find your stuff if they want to go and find things that you've written or media, you know, interviews, other things that you've done? Where can they find that?
Yeah. Twitter and Instagram are probably where I'm the most active, and both of them are just at the J Slate. My initial and last name. So either of those, I post, you know, interviews with players or coaches. And then my written material, sometimes I just do different stuff to interact and talk about sports. So definitely sports heavy, probably majority NBA, but try and keep my feelers out there for all the other sports as well.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on today, and best of luck this upcoming basketball season.
Thank you so much. I'm glad I
came on. Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision, and the people on the streets they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out on